Afternoon, it's 3 o'clock, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Friday, the 1st of June, the year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk with Native American flute player Morgan Fawcett in time for next week's celebration. We'll also talk with three young women from Oklahoma about their part in celebration. Lance Twitch will be here to talk about the Alaska Native Languages Program at UAS. We'll also talk with Puma Manu about her first Friday receptions at the Franklin Street Gallery in Zephyr. Also, Megan Gregory and Christopher Cairns and friends will be here to highlight Saturday's Every Mile is Worth It 5K race. We'll also learn about Floon with author illustrator Gabriel Smetzer. Weather forecast for tonight looks like rain in the evening, then rain showers later on, low temperatures around 44 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Canada, a Native group says a report into the death of an Aboriginal woman who died in custody is disturbing. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the family and friends of Rose Paul say the justice system failed her.
Rose Paul of Nova Scotia was jailed for public drunkenness 3 years ago. Later that day, she suffered a stroke and was left lying on the cement floor of the lockup for 4 hours in her own urine. She died in hospital 3 days later. This was in Truro, Nova Scotia. Last year, the province's justice minister ordered an investigation. The results of that probe were just recently released. It found that police did not properly monitor Rose Paul's health while she was in custody. Cheryl Maloney is the president of the Nova Scotia Native Women's Association.
I'm glad that the minister did come and order this investigation. Like I said, it may not answer all the justice issues or the issues of Victoria or criminal wrongdoing or problems with the Police Act, but this is the first time the Mi'kmaq community, the family, have been able to see what happened that day.
The report recommends better policies to assess the condition of intoxicated people when they're brought to jail and better sharing of information during shift changes. It also urges provincial authorities to update and clarify rules on jail cell inspections. The review found that Paul was not assessed medically or taken to hospital until 10 hours after she was jailed. Maloney says consulting with First Nations on the recommendations is an important and overdue step. This week, the police chief of Truro said he's committed to working with the Aboriginal community on implementing the recommendations. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Tribal leaders, U.S. lawmakers, and federal and state officials are breaking ground on the Navajo Gallup Water Supply Project. According to the U.S. Department of the Interior, the project in New Mexico is expected to deliver much-needed water to more than 250,000 Navajo people. The 280-mile-long pipeline will also bring water to portions of the Hickory Apache Nation and the city of Gallup, and it will also create hundreds of jobs. The initial stage of construction begins Saturday. A ceremony to kick off the project will take place at the community of Twin Lakes, north of Gallup. The White House is celebrating 1 year of the First Lady's Let's Move in Indian Country campaign. Today, the White House is hosting a panel discussion with leaders who've contributed to the initiative. The panel includes tribal leaders, federal officials, and athletes. Two representatives for Wisconsin's Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa are in D.C. for the event. Northland College Radio WRNC's Daniel Kading has more about the Red Cliff program.
Red Cliff Tribal Vice Chairman Marvin DeVos says the tribe received a call from the White House a couple weeks ago.
It's a hands-on approach with the farming activity, the growing that's taken place within our community.
The recognition comes as part of a new initiative spearheaded by First Lady Michelle Obama called Let's Move in Indian Country. In the last year, the program has worked with tribes, communities, and schools across the nation to connect Native peoples to funding and resources with the goal of ending childhood obesity. DeFoe says Red Cliff was invited to take part in a panel discussion about their work with the AmeriCorps VISTA program, or Volunteers in Service to America. Carl Butterfield is a VISTA worker helping the tribe grow community gardens.
And that's what our goal is, to just teach the families and the Native people of how to grow their own vegetables.
Together, the Red Cliff Tribe and VISTA have worked with the local health department and schools. Butterfield says the work they're doing is catching on. Volunteers have grown from 3 to 4 a month to around 25 a month working on tribal gardens since their efforts began 5 years ago.
So we get them out to the farm and we get them active and they get moving around and and they eat a little healthier.
As a tribal leader, Defoe says his goal is to see families become more healthy, happy, and self-sufficient. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading in Ashland.
On this day in 2010, an agreement promoting education for Métis, Inuit, and First Nations in Canada was entered into by the Association of Canadian Deans of Education and Native Leaders. The aim of the Accord on Indigenous Education was to reintroduce Indigenous language and culture into the classroom. It also sought to improve the retention rate of Indigenous students across the country. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:06 and you are tuned to KTLO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. First guests are here to talk about their involvement in a celebration coming up next week to the capital city. Morgan Fawcett and three young women from Oklahoma's Caddo Nation. Thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you for having us.
So, Morgan, you've got a remarkable story, and you've been on the air with us before, but for people who haven't heard you before, could you describe a little bit about your background, please?
Yes, I'm originally from here in Juneau. I was raised most of my years here, and I left when I was around 13, and I started a program called One Heart Creations, and I go around the United States raising awareness for fetal alcohol spectrum disorders. And I also play the Native American flute. In fact, I actually recorded a CD earlier today. I have announced several of my CDs while I was here in Juneau, Ancestral Memories, Tears of My Fathers, Legacy, and now the new one.
What inspired you to take up the flute?
Well, it's a bit of a long story. It actually happened more by chance than design. You know, we ran into the Native American flute in a museum in California, and that's the first time I ever heard the flute, and certainly the first time I picked it up, and I've loved it ever since that day.
Recent happenings? You've been to the White House, I guess.
Yes, I have been to the White House. On December 1st, I had the opportunity to go to the White House and participate in the Native Leadership Conference put on by President Obama, and I also got to meet President Obama. It's part of Champions of Change, Winning the Future Initiative.
And it looks like you're going to be taking a little lesson in Tlingit with Lance Twitchell from the University of Alaska.
Yes, I have successfully completed two semesters of Tlingit language through University of Alaska Southeast, one from my sister, Kuseek, Robbie Littlefield in Sitka, and now this coming semester with Lance.
And you're in town to help celebration coming up next week, and also to take a little bit of a canoe ride.
Yes, I am. I'm going to be dancing with several groups here in town, one of which is the One Canoe Society, Yisku'u, to mention just two. And I will be paddling from Huna to Ok Bay. We're going to leave on a ferry on Sunday, and we're going to come back on the 6th around noon.
And come down to the radio station with these young women from the Caddo Nation in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Would you like to introduce yourselves, please?
My name is Corey Robbins. All of us are from Oklahoma. I am of the Caddo Nation, Haussine, and I am the White Bee family.
I'm Elena Poole. I'm also from the Caddo Nation. My sister and I are Haussine band as well, and we come from the Beaver family.
Hello, my name is Kira Poole. I'm Elena's sister, and as said, I am from the Caddo Nation of Oklahoma, Haussine band, Beaver family.
You're going to take part in celebration. Can you describe what you're going to be doing this next week?
We will be dancing at Celebration. We have our own little dance group of just the three of us and Morgan over here. And we will also be going on the canoe trip.
Why is dancing important to your culture?
It's important because it's a social thing for all of us. We get together and we dance, and we teach the youth about our history with our dances. And it's to be honest, it's fun.
You're going to be taking a canoe ride yourself?
Yes.
You been practicing?
Yes, we've been getting up really early and exercising. Lots of push-ups, lots of fun. Yeah.
Well, and we'll be having you back in the studio next Wednesday to talk about your adventure.
Yes, sir.
All righty. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I don't believe so.
And Morgan, thank you very much for coming down. Do you have a website?
Yes, I do. You can check out One Heart Creations and where I've been and over these last years at www.morganfawcett.vpweb.com.
All right, thank you very much for coming down to the station and have a good canoe ride, and we'll see you next Wednesday.
All right. Thank you very much, Jeff. It's good seeing you again.
On Saturday, June 9 at 8 o'clock at the JDHS Auditorium, come see your friends and neighbors swinging the music of jazz legends Duke Ellington and George Gershwin at the Juno Symphony's 2012 Pops Concert, one night only. Our symphony will join the Thunder Mountain Big Band for a hot summer night of American jazz that'll take you from the streets of Paris to New York's Cotton Club. Tickets on sale now at Hearthside Books, The Jack, and online at junosymphony.org. It don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. See you at the symphony.
It's 3:11 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest is Lance Twitchell. He's the EAS Native Language Program Head. Lance, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Yeah, goodness cheese, Jeff.
So could you describe the UAS program for Native Alaska Native Languages?
Yeah. It's a developing and growing program. We've had just a wonderful history of language and culture study at the university, and we're trying to build upon what's already there. We have this huge amount of resources, and we have teachers, and we're ready. And what we're trying to do now is fill the seats. Our languages are in dire need of people to come and to study them and to learn from them. And so we're developing the classes we have. We're trying to keep in mind different types of audiences. There's basically a three-year sequence for Tlingit. We're working on a three-year sequence for Tsimshian and Haida. But there's also, we want to start developing classrooms that are classes that are more community-based and that might be aimed at what you'd call the non-traditional student. We like the idea of taking the classroom outside of the classroom and having a sort of a home environment where it's maybe a little bit less intimidating and you don't have the structure of the teachers standing over everyone. And so we're trying some different things, and you know, the real goal is just to create a living language, create places for our languages to live and breathe again, and to really just get people excited about the tremendous amount of information and power that you can gain by studying these languages.
Do you have a list of the classes offered?
Yeah. For the fall, we have Intro to Tlingit, which is a one-credit class. It's really just to sort of familiarize yourself with the sounds of the language and some concepts, games and things like that. And that's available locally. It's taught in Sitka. It's available locally in Sitka. It's also available through e-learning. And then Elementary Tlingit, which is it's a four-credit class to really get involved in the language. That's available locally and through e-learning. There's a new class we're trying this semester called Tlingit for the Family and Home. And the goal of this class is really just to figure out ways you can use the language in your house. As we start thinking about language, the way to make sure that it's surviving and thriving is that it's being spoken in the home. And so the goal is just, here are things that you can do on a daily basis in your house so that the language can live in your house. Tlingit Reading, Writing, and Transcription. That's a class for especially speakers who want to be able to write the language in the way it's written today, and also for other students who want to just, you know, say, well, there's all these books out there with Tlingit in it, and I want to be able to read the words when I see them. And if you have future goals of transcribing the language, it's a great class to have. That way, if you have a relative who can speak and you say, okay, well, tell me how to say this phrase or word, you'll be able to write it accurately. And there's a class called Tlingit for the Familiar Listener, and we really went back and forth on what to call this class. We're really trying to identify people out there who can understand a lot of Tlingit, or maybe who know an awful lot of Tlingit words, but just can't quite put sentences together yet. And this is a class that's looking specifically at people like that and trying to bring them over to fluency. And it's a different environment than someone who has limited or no exposure to the language, because I've seen it with some of my family members where you could speak Tlingit or somebody speaking Tlingit and they're responding accurately, but they're responding all in English. And so for our people, if you look at native languages in general, it's a fairly common situation. You know, I've seen it in Lakota, I've seen it in other languages where someone's being spoken to entirely in the language and they're having a complex conversation, but they're responding entirely in English. And so it's a different approach, but we're really trying to make sure that everyone has a chance to be on board with this language. If it's being taught in elementary schools, middle schools, high schools, then we need to have family members who are also speaking. There's Advanced Tlingit, which is a 3-credit course. There's an Alaska Language Apprentice and Mentorship. So whether you speak Tlingit, Haida, or Tsimshian, you identify a master and a speaker, and you mentor with that speaker. And it's probably one of the most successful ways of learning, where you're spending just a set number of hours per week with a fluent speaker, and you're living entirely with the language. And there's a lot of tips and tricks that we can show people to stay in the language. It's really hard, even for fluent speakers, to stay in the language. But that's our goal, is to get in it and stay in it and have different ways to sort of pull yourself back in. There's going to be Intro to Tlingit Linguistics, which is at some level you really got to tackle the grammar of the language, and that's where it gets really fantastic. It can give you tons and tons of headaches, but the complexity of the language is right there, and some of the grammar is just amazing. And then the other class is Tlingit Conversation, Transcription, and Translation. There are a lot of recordings that exist and that are being made with a wide variety of subject matter, whether someone said, you know, tell me a story, and then turned a tape recorder on, or recently some of the things that Dr. Alice Taff at the university has been doing is getting fluent speakers together and say, well, just have a conversation in the language, or talk about dancing. And that way you're getting more of a casual conversation, and you can see how somebody speaks. Because a lot of times in language courses, if you run through classes, then you leave the classroom and you speak this classroom form of Tlingit. But the idea of the transcription and translation class is you can look at how people use the language when two fluent speakers just interact. And it gives you a chance to practice listening to the language, separating words, and also translating things, which is it's a different thing altogether than just learning how to speak. But then to be able to translate it back into English, it's very fun.
What kind of a degree would a person end up with if they took all these courses?
So we're developing a degree which will be on the books next year, which is a Bachelor of Liberal Arts in Alaska Native Languages and Studies. But we're also going to cross-list all of these classes with anthropology. So whether you were studying anthropology or a Bachelor of Liberal Arts in Alaska Native Studies or perhaps independent design, all of these courses would count towards those types of credits. Now, what we're trying to do with this Alaska Native Languages and Studies is think of people who want to work for tribes or corporations or to teach or to just work with languages. And this is a degree where people could make that their primary focus. And as we look out at potential occupations, that's a legitimate occupation. There's a lot of momentum right now in trying to revitalize our languages with the Senate bill that recently passed, was signed by the governor, that will establish a council on Alaska Native Languages. So there's a lot of momentum going forward, and you know, I believe that it's a career choice. It's something you can do. Say, I can invest myself, and I'm going to make sure that our language is alive. And if you do that, you're going to discover tremendous things about the language and things that it can translate, but then it gets shifted quite a bit in translation. So There's a number of different degrees that these would count towards.
Imagine this is for all cultures?
I'm sorry?
This is for all cultures?
Yeah, yeah. And we welcome anybody into the classroom. And so there are a number of people who are coming into our classes, elementary Tlingit. Last semester I had a student who was on a one-semester exchange from Wisconsin, and she had no idea what Tlingit even was. And she did wonderful in the class. Her pronunciation was great, and she was really having fun. And then we have a number of students that are coming in through some of the anthropology classes that are teaching Alaska Native content. And I think we're having a lot of students who are realizing, well, I want to know what it means to live here, where this language lives. I think it's so easy to just drift through this place without understanding the depth of the relationship between the language, the land, and the people. And this is a chance to open that door. And if we look at language survival, we have to say, you know, everybody's on board. You know, not everybody. And there's some people who just don't like the idea, but we're not worried about them. But if we can get everybody on board, then the language lives and breathes on the streets, in the stores. And it's an important language. It's absolutely important. And everybody is welcome. Classes are energetic and fun. The content gets really difficult at times, but we try to supplement that with lots of examples and encouragement. And, you know, just looking at the core students that we have, it's amazing how far they take the language when they really invest themselves.
If people need more information, how can they get a hold of you and talk about it?
If people need to get a hold of me, they can try the university's website, uas.alaska.edu. I could be reached at via email, latwitchell, that's T-W-I-T-C-H-E-L-L, at uas.alaska.edu. And UA Online is the place to register for classes. I would love to see more bodies when there's lots of people. There's a lot more things we can do as far as games and interaction and activities. And I think you will surprise yourself how far you can take it when you're in a positive learning environment.
That's great. So thank you for coming by.
All right. Gunashish.
Time is 3:25, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guest here to talk about art, Puamanu, artist here in Juneau, and also Jarek Fulkerson from Art Matters, and Tana Kegler, also from Art Matters. Here to talk about a couple of shows, one at the Franklin Street Gallery, the Baranoff Hotel, and also one at the Zephyr. Welcome to the station, everybody.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you, Jeff.
So, Pu, you want to describe the shows. One is a solo show at the Zephyr, and the other one is part of a Plain Rain exhibition.
Yes, I'll start with the Franklin Street Gallery. It's a number of Plain Rain artists, I think about 15 artists, that have done landscapes throughout the years. And most recently, we were at the Shrine of St. Therese. And many of the pieces in the show were created at the shrine. And
I understand the weather was a little bit inclement.
It was a weekend that everything was canceled, and so we didn't get out very much. We hunkered inside, and some people ventured outside, but not everyone. But we saw the beautiful view, what we could see of it. Wind, rain.
Hail?
No chill cats.
No chill cats. Tell me how the show the Zephyr came about.
I think maybe Jarek can speak to that.
Well, I bought a house in the flats, and Pua is my neighbor, and we got together through, she came and looked at my house, and she had seen that I was a collector of Dale DeArmond, and ended up showing me her collection of artwork, and I was working with Art Matters, and the relationship kind of formed that we wanted to put a show together with her, and that's how it started.
I understand the frames are unique.
I'm sorry?
Frames are kind of unique.
And difficult.
Yes.
Framing is an artwork all of its own, I think. And she's been doing it for 13 years.
And
yes, I have. Art Matters started 13 years ago, and we've steadily grown through word-of-mouth advertising that way. And Jarek came in with a collection of Dale DeArmond's, and he just had such a passion for art, and he said, I want you to come meet my neighbor. So we went over to meet Pua, and I fell in love with her artwork. And then we decided to redesign the framing shop into an art gallery for consignment art. And so now we're a threesome.
Mm-hmm.
And Kayla Wyatt is a third owner or person involved with Art Matters.
She is. She is my fabulous designer. She can come up with anything. She's got tons of experience, and I also have another art designer that custom frames named Des DeRamer. They're both the most dynamite framers in Juneau, I think.
Now, from what I understand, these frames aren't just regular old frames. They have jewels on them.
Well, I told you that they were jewels because basically I paint and I leave them in my studio, and what they came was they got paintings and put these frames around them, and they to me, they're like jewels because it actually really
enhances
the art.
Well, it's finished work. They're ready to hang on a wall. You can take them off and put them into your own home. We framed for the public, not so much. And the piece, though, they're all individualized.
How do you decide to make a frame? You know, what kind of frame do you use? And
We could be here forever. There's so many samples on the wall. I think you just kind of look at the piece and then visually look behind you and see what is going to complement the piece, because it can really make or break artwork.
That's what the designers are there for,
yeah.
To help you choose the best matting and framing for the piece and enhance it with fillets and just really make it masterpiece quality.
I'd say we probably took 2.5 months for us to put this together. It's not something that happens overnight. It was a labor of love.
And luckily all the paintings were done, so I was not stressed at all.
You left it after Art Matters.
Yes. They were stressed, I'm sure.
It was fun.
The idea is, though, we've been doing everything local. It's a local framer, a local artist. We also worked with Dave Riccio, and we did some limited edition prints, which we brought you one to give to you. So we're using a local printer as well to print everything. So the business is all Juneau. From the printing to the framing to the artist, we're trying to keep the money local and promote local business. I think that's ultimately our goal.
If people want to get a hold of Art Matters, how can they do so?
Our number is 789-4370. We're part of the Perseverance Glass Building. My husband runs one side, and I run the other side, so that's where you find us on Old Dairy Road, and come in and see Pua's beautiful artwork.
So Pua, you've got two shows opening in one night. Is that kind of stressful at all, just the fact that you have to be in two places at once when you're not anywhere at all?
Well, I am going to go to the Franklin Street Gallery for a very short time, but I already told everyone I'm going to come be over at the Zephyr. They're going to have wonderful hors d'oeuvres, and so people from there are going to be coming over as well.
That's right. We should say Zephyr was nice enough to let us use their space, and we're also using their business to promote their own business. They'll be providing appetizers and beer and wine, so it's, again, self-promoting. It's all local business.
How many pictures are you having to show at Zephyr?
I think there's at least 24, maybe 25.
I thought we were closer to 30.
Oh, maybe 30.
Maybe with the little ones. And there's sizes from, you know, a 4x6 to, a, I don't know, 24x30. So there's something for everybody. That's the idea, is that you can find something personalized for you.
Well, how has your work changed over the years?
I think that when I first came to Juneau, I started painting landscapes. Before that, it had been abstract, just pure abstracts. And I think it's changed over the years. I really want to, and it's still my goal to paint more abstracted landscapes. And so there are a few abstracted pieces in there, but it's mostly landscapes. And I think that another way is I started painting with oils, which I love. They don't freeze, and I'm really able to capture the luminosity of the, I guess, the atmosphere of Southeast with oils. It's wonderful to use.
How about working with other artists like the Plain Rain Group?
They are very inspiring. I mean, I am inspired by everyone. It's a pretty loose group of kindred spirits, I would say. And you know, we meet every Saturday at Foodland in the little cafeteria area. Then we figure out somewhere to go out and paint. Anyone can come and join us. And so I would encourage people who might be interested in trying painting outside to come and join us any Saturday morning at 9. And we also always leave a little note on the telephone booth there and let people know where we're gone if they come a little bit later and we're gone.
Well, do you find yourself working thematically, or is each painting by itself?
I have a couple of themes because I love painting flowers that come out at times of year or environments during certain times of year. I love painting the glacier. So basically I have flower paintings during the spring and fall paintings which are yellower, and then the snowy, icy parts in the winter. But each painting is individual, I think. I mean, I go out with a fresh set of eyes each time and paint. I mean, and feeling the elements is part of the joy of painting in plein air. Is you're out there feeling the cold and rain, except that weekend at the shrine we stayed inside. We're wimps. But it's pretty good. I need to get tougher. I mean, I was pretty wimpy. I've been pretty wimpy lately.
So the Plain Rain Group, it's Friday night. At what time does it open? At
the opening at the Franklin Street Gallery is between 4:30 and 6:30, and
there'll be wine tasting there as well.
There will be wine tasting there as well. Mm-hmm.
And then at the Zephyr.
At the Zephyr, there will be wine and hors d'oeuvres.
What time does that start?
And beer.
4:30 to 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Derek Wilkerson, Dana Kegler, and Pua Manu, thank you for coming by the station and talking about your art shows. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Well,
thank you so much.
Us.
And yes, thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you.
Time is 3:36 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on the Juneau afternoon. Next guests are here to talk about the second annual Every Mile is Worth It race, which is going on tomorrow at 9 o'clock at Sandy Beach. Thank you for coming by, everybody.
Thank you for having us, Jeff.
So Megan Gregory and Chris Cairns, and can you introduce yourselves to the other two people, please?
I'm Christine with Slow Foods.
I'm Justin Powell with Energy Massage Therapy.
I'm Chris Cairns with the National Alliance on Mental Illness.
And Megan Gregory with Search.
It's a 5K maze race and 1 mile walk. Want to talk about it, please?
Yeah, it's the second annual Every Mile is Worth It race, and it's a race to raise awareness about suicide prevention as well as promote health and wellness, and all proceeds benefit the Youth Ambassador Program.
Tell me about the Youth Ambassador Program, please.
The Youth Ambassador Program is a program that I created last year. The goal of the program is to work with one student from every community in Southeast Alaska to be the leader in their community and work with our One is Too Many task force at Search.
And the race is to promote health and wellness?
Yep, which is why I've invited Christine from Slow Foods as well as Justin Powell, who will be giving massages, pre- and post-sports massages, and Christine with Slow Foods will have a Slow Foods quarterly potluck after the race. If you guys want to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so Slow Foods Southeast, we promote good, clean food, so food that's fair for humans and the environment. And this race is specifically of interest because it's bringing a bunch of different organizations and community members together, all really just promoting health. So we're going to have our quarterly potluck there beginning at 10:30, we said?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll have some food going for folks running and walking and doing all that fun stuff. Hope to see you all there.
Yeah, and I'd eventually like to see community gardening at every school in Southeast, which is why I want Slow Foods to be there so that people can learn about it and get involved in this community and hopefully, you know, encourage people to start their own gardens. Because not only is it important to exercise, I think it's also important to eat healthy, to have a well-balanced lifestyle.
You have to tell me what a maze race is.
A maze race, well, Paul DeSlover is actually out there cleaning up the trail right now, and he is going to make it kind of like an obstacle course where you'll be running, zigzagging past each other on the trail. You'll eventually end up on the beach for a little while, and then you'll end up back at the shelter at Sandy Beach.
So this is a collaboration between your organizations, and what other organizations are helping out?
This year I've collaborated with NAMI, as well as the Juneau Suicide Prevention Coalition. We've actually ordered 250 Chico bags because I also think it's important to give back to your community and be environmentally friendly. So the Tlingit and Haida Environmental Youth Leadership Team will be there tomorrow helping us hand out reusable Chico bags, which have our logo, as well as the Juneau Suicide Prevention Coalition logo and the helpline number on it.
What's the secret for getting a massage after a race or before a race?
Well, the benefits of massage are basically it after a race, it is good for your parasympathetic nervous system, slowing down your body and allow and also promote circulation, which it speeds up the recovery process of your muscles after a race. A pre-race massage looks like a 5-minute quick session, very quick hand techniques to, again, promote circulation and get the blood flowing in the body. I'll be offering a $5 5-minute pre-race massages and a $1 a minute post-race massages, all proceeds going to the fundraising event. So hop on the table.
I'm ready myself now. Megan, is there an entry fee?
Yes. Actually, the fee has been waived for all youth under 18 this year. If people want to pre-register, they have until 5 o'clock today. They can drop it off at 3245 Hospital Drive in the Search Behavioral Health and Dental Building, and that is $10. The registration forms are available on the southeastroadrunners.org website, or they can register the day of for $12.
All right, and if people need more information about that, is there a phone number they can call?
Yes, If you would like more information, please feel free to call 463-6645 or contact me at mgregory, that's M-G-R-E-G-O-R-Y, at S-E-A-R-H-C.org.
All right, we've been talking about the second annual Every Mile is Worth a Race going on tomorrow at 9 o'clock at Sandy Beach. Does the race start at Sandy Beach at 9 o'clock, or is that just check-in time?
No, that's when I'm asking everybody to be there to register. If you'd like to come a little earlier for a pre-massage, that's great, too. But the race will start at 9:30.
All right, anything you'd like to add, anybody that I might have forgotten to ask?
We also have $4,000 in prizes to give away from local businesses around Juneau.
Such
after
as,
the race.
Such as. You, now you're getting me hooked here.
What's that?
Such as.
Oh, my gosh. The list goes on and on. But we've got tickets from the Dolphin Jet Tours for whale watching. We've got zip line tickets to give away. We've got Perseverance Theater gift certificates. Actually, if you Google if you go to the Juneau Empire and enter Every Mile's Worth It, there was actually an article in the sports section yesterday with a list of everybody who's contributed.
All right, thank you for coming by.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks. Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 1st of June, 2012. It's the birthday of Dante Alighieri, born in Florence, Italy, in 1265. At least we think so. Nobody knows for sure. We do know that Dante met his great love and muse, Beatrice, when he was about 9 years old. Love at first sight. 3 years later, he was promised in marriage to someone else, but that didn't stop him from writing about Beatrice in his poetry. She was, he said, his main reason for living. He had political aspirations, and because the law held that public officials had to be a member of one of the guilds, Dante became a pharmacist. He was opposed to the political power of the Vatican in Florence, and he lost that battle and was exiled to Rome. And there, with his fortunes left behind, Beatrice now dead, Dante had nothing but poetry to devote himself to, and it was then towards the end of his life that he began work on his Divine Comedy. He chose to write the poem in colloquial Italian rather than Latin, which had been the language for Western literature for more than 1,000 years. And it was the first epic poem in Western literature in which the author served as the main character. He died of malaria shortly after he finished it, at the age of 55. It's the birthday of the poet who wrote, "I must go down to the seas again, to the lonely sea in the sky, and all I ask is a tall ship and a star to steer her by." John Masefield, born in Ledbury, England, 1878. And it's the birthday of the linguist and translator C.K. Ogden, born Fleetwood, England, 1889. He was a founder of the Cambridge Magazine, which published George Bernard Shaw and Thomas Hardy, John Masefield, and Virginia Woolf, G.K. Chesterton. At the time of the First World War, he translated books from French and German into English. He wrote a book called The Meaning of Meaning, The Influence of Language on Thinking. And he created a language called Basic English, a simplified version of English, a vocabulary of just 850 words, only 18 of which are verbs, which he thought would improve communication and help to achieve world peace. George Orwell at first was in favor of Basic English and then changed his mind and made fun of it in his novel 1984 as the model for Newspeak. Here's a poem for today by Richard Wilbur, Blackberries for Amelia. Fringing the woods, the stone walls, and the lanes, old thickets everywhere have come alive, their new leaves reaching out in fans of five from tangles overarched by this year's canes. They have their flowers too, it being June, and here or there in brambled dark and light are small five-petaled blooms of chalky white, as random clustered and as loosely strewn as the far stars, of which we now are told that ever faster do they bolt away, and that a night may come in which, some say, we shall have only blackness to behold. I have no time for any change so great, but I shall see the August weather spur berries to ripen where the flowers were, dark berries, savage sweet, and worth the wait. And there will come the moment to be quick and save some from the birds, and I shall need 2 pails, old clothes in which to stain and bleed, and a grandchild to talk with while we pick. Blackberries for Amelia by Richard Wilbur from his collected poems, published by Harcourt and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. iPad users can download the 3 most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Written by Holly Vanderhaar, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
I'm Laurie Morton, Executive Director of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault in Alaska. 2 years ago, the Council surveyed women across Alaska. The Alaska Victimization Survey paints a shocking portrait. 59 of every 100 Alaska women experienced domestic violence, sexual assault, or both in their lifetime. Violence isn't a solution. Respect is always the right choice.
Brought to you by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Safety, prevention, accountability.
Time is 3:48 and you are tuned to KTLO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. If you're near your computer right now, and who isn't, Google Floon by Gabriel. It's F-L-E-W-N. We'll be talking with Gabriel Smetzer and Jerry Smetzer about the Floon Project. Gabriel, thank you very much for joining us by telephone.
Hi, thanks a lot.
And Jerry, thank you for being in the station with us today.
Sure, Jeff. Thank you very much for the invitation.
So for people who've never heard of Floon, could you describe it for us, please?
Go ahead, Gabe. It's all up to you.
Floon is a story that I'm working on. It's an interactive animation, and it follows a whale whose ocean's been drained. So he gathers up all the fish and puts them on his back and finds this driftwood log that he uses as stilts and walks across a continent to try and find a new ocean. So it's kind of a whimsical tale. It's a journey of travel, and then along the way, he meets other characters that help him along.
And this is a project that you came up with by yourself?
Yeah.
How did it develop? Actually, before we get to that, tell me a little bit about your background in art.
I work as a freelance animator, mainly in San Francisco. And I've worked on a lot of different projects for other clients. But I've been always wanting to make something, a personal project, and I've been working on this for a little over a year now.
And how did the idea develop?
It kind of slowly. I'm not working with a script. I'm kind of creating characters and letting the characters sort of write the story. So whenever I create a character, I think, how can I make it weirder or more unique or more interesting? And then once I had this concept of this whale walking on stilts, the visual image started to really develop, and I felt like I had a good idea to really make a nice animation.
Well, a bearded whale is not the only character. Could you talk about the other characters in your project?
There's also a frog that builds kind of a unicycle helicopter, and he flies. So there's different characters, and sort of the idea behind them is that each one are sort of pulled out of their environment, but they have this ability to invent, so they think of new forms of invention to adapt to their new environment. So there's kind of, in this world, there's sort of a catastrophic event, and each of these animal characters are adapting to it. Another one of the characters is a rabbit who develops these wings. They're sort of Leonardo da Vinci type of wings that she's able to fly with.
And this is an interactive project that you expect people to take part in as well as whether it's kind of like a game?
Yeah, it's using game mechanics, but I didn't want it to be about chasing points or kind of silly cliche themes. Or I wanted to really focus on creating this a deeper story and something that was really interesting and had, you know, characters with depth, and it was also fun and interesting at the same time.
And what will the participants do when they open the program?
Well, you start playing as this the frog character, which is kind of helicopter device that he's flying, and you're flying across these landscapes, and then as you move through the landscapes, you meet the different characters, and the story starts to unfold, and then there's pieces of animation kind of linking the different scenes together.
Well, you've really done a good job in creating the characters. They have true personalities.
Yeah. That's the idea, for sure.
So you're trying to get funding to do this by using the Kickstarter program. Could you tell us about Kickstarter, please?
Yeah, Kickstarter is a crowdfunding website. So basically the idea is an artist or a musician with any kind of project can pitch their project and set a financial goal that they need in order to complete the project. And then people can back at any level, anywhere from a dollar to, you know, thousands of dollars. And when you reach the amount of money that you need to create that project, you get awarded that money to finish the project, so which is really great. And it really helps you know, independent animators and artists like myself.
And from what I understand, you came out of the gate, you know, with a good amount of funding.
Yeah, it's going really well. I've been getting a lot of positive response, and not only that, it really builds a fan base, and it's a way of getting the word out there.
What's your goal?
16,000.
How are you doing so far?
Pretty good. It's like I think I'm at about 85% or 84%.
How do people find Fluent and contribute?
They can find it on the Kickstarter website.
Or they can just Google Fluent by Gabriel?
Yeah. It's spelled F-L-E-W-N.
Hey, how did you come up with the name?
Well, it's kind of a secret on how that ends up resolving the story, but it's kind of the past tense of flying, because there's lots of flying. It's kind of a silly word that seemed appropriate.
So you're busy besides doing the animating, promoting the whole project, and you're going to have a presence in First Friday tonight?
Yeah, I'm going to have some work at the... I think my dad could probably tell more about where my work's going to be displayed.
I was just over there at the Alaska Robotics Gallery. That's a new gallery that Alaska Robotics has set up. They used to be in the Heritage Building. Now they're on Front Street there next to the 20th Century Theater. They've got some works out, some Fluent images up on the wall, and some for sale. And I'd like to encourage everybody to come down and check them out.
What other activities are you going to be taking part in June?
Yeah, I'm going to be giving a presentation in Juneau about a lot of my kind of creative my secrets to creativity, as well as how I'm creating this world and how I animate, and also talking about animation in general and some of the past projects I've worked on, and it should be fun.
What's the secret of making an animated character have personality and making it believable?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough question. It's taken me years to really develop a good character. It's it has to have a personality. You really have to think of, like, you know, what does it eat? What does this character do? Where does it come from? You know, what's the character's story, and how does that relate to its larger story?
Cool. When are you coming up in June?
Is between the 15th and 19th. Do we have a set date yet? I'm not sure.
Yeah. Do you mean for your events here in Juneau, Gabe?
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll be at the... We've made application to do to paint one of the whale's tails that's coming out here as part of Skip Wallen's Bronze Whale Project. We'll know about that in a couple days, but that'll be Sunday, June 17th. Gabe will be in town on the 14th, and we'll figure out something to have him do then. Probably something at Alaska Robotics again. They've been so supportive. The main event, though, is going to be Gabe's technical presentation at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater. That'll be Monday, June 18th, 7 o'clock. And people can call me at 586-1215 if they have any questions about any of this.
Okay, and they can also Google Floon by Gabriel and get a visual image of what the whole project is about.
Yes.
All right, Gabriel and Jerry, thank you very much for coming down to the station and talking about Floon.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Yeah, thank you.
Now for a real treat. Not only does Ray Sylvia play the guitar amazingly, but he is known as Harmonica Ray. He has been called one of the best harmonica players on the West Coast. I never heard anyone play harmonica.
It's 3:58 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau, Douglas. KTUO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Ballinock Bay Area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT Service Route at 91.9. In Excursion Inland and Icy Strait, you can hear KTUO on K210 AS 89.9. Or online at www.ktwo.org. Weather forecast for tonight, periods of rain with low temperatures around 44 degrees. Forecast for Saturday, rain, so showers likely becoming scattered in the afternoon. High temperatures around 52 degrees. Saturday night, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain showers in the evening and low temperatures around 42 degrees with light winds. Sunday, mostly cloudy skies with high temperatures around 54 degrees. Thank you for tuning in to June afternoon today and have a great evening and weekend.
It adds to the business uncertainty for all U.S. companies.
A very weak jobs report for May, only 69,000 new jobs, and unemployment is up to 8.2%.
For Friday, June 1st, this is All Things Considered.